You're listening to the Keys 107. You're listening to the Keys 107, opening the doors to endless possibilities in the pursuit of love, peace, and happiness with your host, Dr. Rafika.
Welcome to the Keys 107 Network. We have a very, very special show for you that we thought it fitting, as this day of December 18th has a lot of significance to the Black community here in the United States. And as the world observes what's happening to Black people here in America, it has really has global significance. But our focus right now today are the people here in the wilderness of North America. But let me take a moment and just try to give a snapshot overview of this magnificent woman that we have as our very special guest. She goes by the name Eve Angel Mama D Love Yanubian. And I just wanted to take a moment and make sure I pronounce that correctly, because there's so much significance in that name. She is a minister, an author, an educator, an activist, an international award-winning poet, and crusader for children's rights. And she believes educators and public officials should not use the K word. The K word references calling children kids. And as she says, a kid is an animal with four legs, and a child is a human being, a person with two legs. And I want to add to that that we were taught in the Nation of Islam by Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that when you call a child or a person out of their name, you sort of shape how they act. For example, if you call children kids, how do you expect them to act? Mama D, Eve Angel, spreads the wayo, W-A-Y-O, which is an acronym for We Are One Spirit, using a love approach to learning, and teaches violence is a virus, and don't catch it and don't spread it. And as she says, it starts in the heart and it grows in the head. If it's not stopped there, it's acted out in the head, and that hand is attached to somebody, that and that body is you. So in 1984, Mama D founded the Global Committee Commemorating King Day, the only organization in the world that visually affirms and historically preserves the three key principles of the American Civil Rights Renaissance of the 1960s, and that frames from 1954 to 1965. And she conceived the Days of Respect, or the DOR, concept in 1968 and founded the organization when her sister, Helen Richard, became the first female CTA driver to be slain in the line of duty. DOR includes principles of human and civil rights on Humanitarian Day, January 15th, which is white colors, principles of nonviolence on Victims of Violence Holy Day, spelled with W, H-O-L-L-Y, April 4th, and the colors of black, and spiritual and moral principles of righteousness, justice, peace, prophethood, and culture, coexistence in the spirit of Wayo. That's a very tiny snapshot of this magnificent woman. In 2005, she introduced a proposal to the Chicago School Board that changed McCosh Elementary School to Emmett Till Math and Science Academy. And more significantly, she wrote the resolution for Emmett Till Memorial Bridge on 71st Street after State Representative Milton Patterson, District 34, and he insisted that she write it. And it went through in time for the 50th anniversary of his murder. The theme was Hands Across Emmett L. Till Road. Let's get into it. So we're going to frame this conversation with the focus of, and a question, do you know the significance of December 18th and how it relates to the 13th Amendment and Juneteenth? Without me continuing talking anymore, I'm going to bring on our very special guest, Eve Angel Mama D. She is going to be joined with my co-host, James Muhammad. Mama D, your mic is live. Check in.
Oh, well, hallelujah. Greetings to you. And just let me thank you for this opportunity to be with you and for that awesome introduction. I'd just like to add one thing. As the creator and author of Emmett Till Road, it's the longest strip of honorary naming in Chicago's history, but I was going for a real name. Now, that street resurrected the legacy of Emmett Till, and that had been buried for 30 years. I challenge anybody, tell me something about Emmett between 1956 and 1984, and you won't find it. Mm. And so when Rosa Parks showed up at the street dedication, she said it was what happened to Emmett that gave me the courage, December 1st, 1955, to do what I did. So the rest is history. And Emmett was 14. He lived to be 14, 1 month and 2 days old. And he died on my Earth Day, which I made 10 years old. And for some reason, I think that we are psychically connected, because when it comes to the significant memorials to Emmett Till, I had a hand in one of those, and I couldn't possibly have planned that. It just happened. I mean, tomorrow is December 18th, and it is a historic day that the world should know about. It marks the 148th anniversary of the certification of the 13th Amendment, and of course, it abolished slavery in America and throughout its territory. And that was Indian territory, because they had slaves, except if you were duly convicted by a jury of your peer for a crime, and never was the slave and the slave master equal. So they were never jurors of your peers in the first place. And in the second place, vagrancy was a crime, and you could be locked up for vagrancy and spend a lifetime behind bars. So that was just another way of using legalese to keep enslavement going. But 18 years ago, City Council designated Divinity Days in Chicago, and October 16th, Atonement Day, and December 18th became Spiritual Succession Divinity Day. Now, that word, this, again, is one of the resolutions that I personally drafted, because people in Chicago were so hate-filled and terrorized by Minister Louis Farrakhan, who's definitely not a terrorist, that they wouldn't touch Million Man March with a 10-foot pole. And even Reverend Jesse Jackson had to be called out by Congressman Gus Savage to join in on the Million Man March, which was interesting because it was Minister Farrakhan that offered him security when he ran for president, and no one else would do that, and he had to denounce him. But getting back to October 16th, Atonement Day, and December 18th, Spiritual Succession Divinity. And why spiritual secession? Because the South physically seceded from the United States of America and became the Confederate States of America to keep black bodies in perpetual chains. So now is the time for us to spiritually secede and be in America and not of it. Because as it is written in that Black History Bible book, whose hero is a woolly-haired man with bronze-colored feet to match his bronze-colored face, that I do not pray for the world. I pray for those that are in the world and not of it, like I was in it and not of it. So that is why we should spiritually secede from that whole satanic system of subordination. So going right along, it's a day to listen to the Honorable Marcus Garvey, who said we must emancipate ourselves from mental slavery. Because while others can remove the chains from your body, only you yourself can remove them from your mind. And we should listen to what Prophet Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said. He said, you must write your own emancipation proclamation for self-asserted manhood. When you think about slavery, because when you think about enslavement, not slavery, but enslavement, if you know the truth, it will make you free. Then the question becomes, not knowing or caring about the date when divine power weapons pulled down the stronghold of 246 years of evil crimes against humanity, is that a sign that you should look in the mirror and unchain your brain so that you can spiritually secede from the satanic system of subordination, so that you can change the negative media image of black men from menace to miracle?
So one of the things that you and I were speaking about, you know, in preparation for this conversation was just looking at the framing of the wording in the 13th Amendment, and that there is a loophole in that whole concept of what freedom for the African American meant with the ratification on December 18th of the 13th Amendment. And that loophole spoke to that part of it that talks about if you are not accused and tried of a crime. We know that the numbers of incarceration continue to rise, especially with black men. Let me give you an example. Dr. Wesley Muhammad reported in his book, Understanding the Assault on the Black Man, Black Manhood, and Black Masculinity, that he states, in 1988, there were approximately 1,600 juvenile offenders in adult jails. Today, towards the end of the Clinton administration, significantly 1997, there were more than 9,000. So those numbers are astounding.
And they are rooted in the so-called crime bill that that Joe Biden boasted about writing. And that had to do with three strikes and you're in, regardless of the minor crime that it might have been to be a federal crime. I don't know if trespassing, but I suppose trespassing, depending on where it's done, that could be a federal crime. So that meant you were locked up in jail for life because it's three strikes and you're in for life. But the bill was flawed from Jump Street, because it was mandatory time for crack cocaine use, and it was probational time for powdered cocaine, which the crack came from, but it was mostly what white users preferred. So right away, it was biased, and it's a bill that he boasts about. And I believe Bill Clinton had some statements to say about, as a matter of fact, I believe it was on October 16th on Atonement Day, when 2 million men were gathered to reconnect with the Creator and with each other. And did you have some statements that he said?
Yes. And again, I'm going to refer to Dr. Wesley's book, because he also penned that speech was titled Black. That speech was at the University of Texas. The quote is that blacks are right to think something is terribly wrong when almost one in three African American men in their 20s are either in jail, on parole, or otherwise under supervision of the criminal justice system. He acknowledged that this was unfair, that a disproportionate percentage of black men were in prison for drug crimes in comparison to the percentage of blacks who use drugs in our society. And that those remarks came from directly from his speech that he gave on the day of the Million Man March on October 16th, 1995.
And, well, there was a United States Senate in Congress, apology for slavery and Jim Crow segregation laws. It was June 18th, I believe, 2009. Barack Obama was the president at the time. And they quoted George Bush and Bill Clinton stating, "The vestiges still exist today." Now, he was president at the time, and he knew these significance, and he knew that Joe Biden was responsible for these disproportionate arrests, that he can talk about it in 2009, but look at what he was saying in 1995. When he was the president, he had an opportunity, but he did nothing about it. And that's where we are today. And it's the same when it comes to education. But, you know, really, this gets back to the Kerner Report. I believe it was 1967, in which they determined that white society created the problems, white institutions maintain them, and white, I believe, it's society condones it, and that there were three choices open to the nation, national choices. You could either pursue integration, and that wasn't working. You could eliminate the ghetto, rebuild it with a program, or you can encourage them to go to other areas. If not, by 1985, the major cities would be predominantly Negro and predominantly poor. So these were the three choices open to the nation, and that encouraged them to go to other areas, actually became forced migration. And while they were giving Negro Black vouchers to go to these other places, they were giving other people visas, allowing them to come in and replace those populations of Black people. Because it became very clear, they are segregated in an area, they can create a lot of havoc. So we will never allow that to happen again. So we can look over here at our voucher map and say, oh boy, if we don't have any Negro Blacks in Iowa, let's send some vouchers over there. Kentucky, they're kind of low on their Negro supply, so let's send some vouchers over there. So they've had all of these years to make sure our numbers were such that we could never be a threat to the nation. So basically what happened here in the city of Chicago, we had places like Cabrini Green, next to the Loop downtown, prime real estate. Generations of people had lived there. They loved it there. Robert Taylor, they loved it there. So HUD became a slum landlord, and they wouldn't fix the toilets or the elevators, and the buildings, which they have authority over, became in disrepair and unlivable. It's, oh, wow. We've got to get you out of here. These places are unsafe, but the minute we get everything straightened out, you can come back. Well, we still got that problem. They haven't come back yet. So this has been a well-orchestrated plan. And what was interesting about the disproportionate arrest, believe it or not, well, it's a fact. Trump, he signed what he called the First Step Act, and it reactivated the Second Chance Act. And Trump put $100 million a year for returning citizens. And the money was supposed to be to provide housing for them and job development and child care. Now it appears that all of that money is going toward people that are just stepping off the bus, not citizen, so-called sanctuary asylum seekers. And they're getting, I believe it's $150 million from the city. They're getting $160 million from the state and $90 million from the county. And they are just absolutely turning the lives of residents in chaos. All of a sudden, the Park District, the field houses, the park closes at 11 o'clock. Those places are being used for residential apartments so people can live in the park. And then all of the citizens that had services at the field house for their children and others, they no longer have access. So in a chance, in a real way, we are being taxed without being represented. And this all came about with the sanctuary law. It was an executive order. And it can end with Brandon Johnson, the new mayor's executive order, because he has the authority to do it. He just doesn't have the will to do it. And it's really adding insult to injury.
Talk about the significance of the 13th Amendment and the actual quote or actual pinning of the language, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. That kind of language, it makes it very vague. And we also, you and I also spoke about the conviction of a jury of your peers, in which we know there's a disparity on the jury of your peers' statement, because it is rare that black people are tried in a court with a jury of our peers.
Absolutely correct. And it's interesting that they shall be duly convicted by a jury of your peers. Those particular words have been omitted. And most of the people that serve on these jurors, they come from the suburbs, and they are just not a jury of your peers. Definitely no all-white jury could have ever been a jury of your peers. And that is why today many people are saying, I think Colorado already has done it, has voted to vacate the 13th Amendment. Now, the danger of that is that the 13th Amendment holds the United States accountable for reparations. Juneteenth does not do that. And to say that, to make it a national holiday, it would say that Joe Biden is up to his old ways again, because Juneteenth is false information and disinformation, which is false information deliberately and often covertly spread in order to influence public opinion or obscure the truth. That's what Juneteenth does. And I think it took a lot of America, especially NAAs. And when I use the word NAAs, I'm talking about Indigenous Native American Africa. You are indigenous if you are in the country before it becomes a country. And that is why Richard Wright said Native Sons, and that's why in the Lift Every Voice and Sing, it says true to our native land, or Nat King Cole sings about a little Native boy. We are Natives of this country, Indigenous Native American Africans and Indigenous Native American Indians are twin victims of the American genocidal Holocaust. The red man got the savage and the slave. They were the only two that could be born in America and not be citizens in the land of their birth until the 14th Amendment. And it said, if you're born in America, you're a citizen. And if not, you had to be naturalized by passing a test. And that test required you to read, write, and speak English in order to be a citizen and legally vote in federal, state, and local elections. And that they are trying to do all these things to not for enslaved. A former slave will not be able to file a legitimate claim for reparations. And our leaders are definitely leading us astray, because they're still talking about, well, this is what we should do. We should have a study. You don't need to have a study. These asylum seekers, they don't have a study, but they are having laws that put them above the law, just like they had laws to keep us beneath the law. From after 246 years of being a movable property thing called chattel, A car is movable property. It rolls on wheels. Enslaved person was movable property. He walked on two legs. But legally speaking, there was no difference in the car thing and the human being thing. They were both property. Couldn't read or write, couldn't grow food or sass their masters, no matter what the situation. So what has happened is they have always told us the same thing. Well, you know, Hitler is beating up on the Jews, and as soon as we take care of that, we're going to get back to you. Oh, well, you heard what happened. Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, so we're going to get back to you. And then Korea, and then Vietnam, and then the Gulf War, and then Afghanistan. And now we got to stop Putin from beating up on the Ukraine. No lie can live forever. And we can just not continue to be that stupid and say, hey, look, we're the backbone of your party. I think you better act like it, you know, because we're not buying it. And you hate Trump and hate gun control. It's not the gun. It is the hate in the heart that pulls the trigger. So when he gets that, I've probably got off subject.
Well, let me circle back for a second because right. That's where I was going. I was going right there.
Yes, yes. Juneteenth. First of all, it's to say a national holiday to say slavery ended with Juneteenth when it could not have in the first place. The Emancipation Proclamation did not include everybody. It only impacted the rebellious states that had pulled out of the United States and became the Confederate States of America. They had their own government, their own everything. So Lincoln, in September 22nd, 1862, he gave the Confederates an ultimatum. He said, you get back in the Union. If not, I'm going to free your slaves. But they didn't get back in the Union, so he freed their slaves. But if you were not in rebellion and you had slaves, they weren't even impacted by the Emancipation Proclamation. And the reason the Emancipation Proclamation was bogus is because of the Dred Scott decision. Now, the Dred Scott decision of 1857 was in full effect, and it said blacks, not everybody, have no rights that whites are bound to respect. They are a subjugated race. Didn't say Negro race, didn't say colored race, said they are a subjugated race. They are inferior. And not or, inferior and subordinate, whether they are emancipated or not. So the only way you can overturn a Supreme Court decision is with a constitutional amendment. And that is what the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment does. But to just get it going, Lincoln freed the slaves, you know, everybody had their Juneteenth moment. Nobody set the slave down and said, well, you know, President Lincoln said, y'all can go now. Slavery's over with. It didn't happen. They could not read or write by law in the first place. Second place, there was no email. There was no texting. There was no, telegraph. There was no Daily Defender so that you read about it. No. You were in the kitchen cooking, and you heard the generals and everybody talking in front of you because they never considered you a person. You were just a thing there. And you heard them talking about the blue coats. If you get to the blue coat, then you can be free. So everybody had a Juneteenth moment when they discovered something about freedom for the slaves, and they just sort of ran away. So for him, Joe Biden, to come out with disinformation willfully, it's just a distraction to get us off of that 13th Amendment, which some people are working on. We're going to vacate that. For what purpose? Reparations now. And that's what we have to insist on, because that Juneteenth did not end slavery. And but to keep us singing and dancing, that's always good for us. Let's celebrate. That's what it's about. Because this is the day we did it ourselves and we can do it. No, everybody gets repair.
I wanted to share that as a child growing up in a nationalist household and being a part of that sort of New York Brooklyn in particular, movement of Black consciousness, I just don't remember a Juneteenth celebration anywhere at any time. I don't remember it being a part of the fabric of conversation focus. And it seems to me that when I started hearing the chirping that this day was going to become a national holiday, it just seemed to me that it was a sanitizing of the severity of what the 13th Amendment actually represents to Black people in America.
Absolutely. Sanitizing, lying about it, getting the 13th Amendment, which is a constitutional act, getting your focus off of that. I never heard anything about any Juneteenth. The whole 8 years that Barack Obama was in office, making history for three special interest groups, and it did not include any of them that gave him 96% of their vote the first time and 94% of their vote the second time. He made history for the Latinos, first Latina on the Supreme Court of all places, a Latino woman before a Black woman that would be on the Supreme Court, when I think in the year 2000 there was only 45% of Hispanics were born in America, and they had, and yet there was, I don't even think it was 45%. I better retract that because I don't have the exact figures, but it was like 13. The population of Black people was like 13 million, and there was about 4 million of Latinos, and all of a sudden they have leapfrogged over us, and they are now the largest minority group because of all of the importing them in. And so to come up with this bogus holiday, I never heard about Juneteenth in my entire life, and I'm 78 years old, and I've been a freedom fighter since the age of 5, which is 73 years, when I refused to give up my seat on the front of the bus 5 years before Rosa Parks and got home and all hell broke loose, and I've been freaking freedom fighting ever since. But and there was no questions from the civil rights leaders, from the influencers, from the politicians. Didn't anybody say anything about it? Just like no one has said anything about 2015 to 2024, a decade to deal with the police killings of Black men and boys, disproportionate arrest, and massive school closing. They haven't said a word about that. And this was what the United Nations did, set aside a decade. And what has happened? There has been no outcry from the impacted group, which is us, although they came to Chicago, this working group of United Nations people, and took testimonies at Chicago State University. There's been nothing said about that. I don't hear anything about the Ark of Return, which is a memorial to the slave and the transatlantic slave victims, and it took them 6 years to build it. It's located in Manhattan, New York, in the United Nations headquarters. And yet, I don't hear anybody saying we should go there and visit that Ark of Return memorial to the victims of slavery and the transatlantic slave trade. Or we should honor the International Day of Remembrance of Slaves and victims of the transatlantic slave trade. There it is, 2001, when the United Nations designated slavery a crime against humanity, said it always has been. That was in 2001, September, and they designated they said that the world community needed to remember the victims of these tragedies, and therefore they designated this International Day of Remembrance. We don't hear our influences and civil rights workers and political leaders saying anything about that either.
And as I shared with you, when that memorial was unveiled, I didn't hear anything about it, and I live in New York.
And you didn't hear anything about the
phone? No, I didn't know about it until you mentioned it to me.
Right.
So I'm definitely going to go check it out.
Yeah,
Hey, Angel?
Yes, sir.
I just want to say
I'm
first
sorry,
and foremost.
I just kind of forgot that you were there.
No. Y'all was on a roll. So I just want to first and foremost say to you that we are so grateful for your steadfastness, your dedication and commitment to inform and make folks aware of the history. You are truly a gem among our people. I just want to say that I honor you and what you're doing, and that we need to replicate you in the best way so that the messages of truth and understanding of our history and our sojourn in America can be heard. And I believe that is the challenge. And I just want to, I want you to speak to me and speak to the audience. How do we address that challenge of making sure that people are conscious? Our youth, there's so much distractions. There's so many things that are being swept underneath the rug and not being brought forward. But how do we connect them to that history? What are the strategies that we could successfully use? Is there a curriculum that we can maybe implement? And how do we make that happen? So I'll stop right there.
Well, I think we need a coalition, children's coalitions of conscious curriculum. The days of respect, January 15th, April 4th, and August 28th, they coincide with Reverend Dr. King's actual birth, January 15th, his actual assassination date, April 4th, and his actual date of the March on Washington, which is also the anniversary of Emmett Till's kidnap lynching. When you change the brain, you will change the behavior. We need to culturally capture these days and put them on the school calendar. We've had it introduced in Springfield. We were told that it went through, it passed, but I haven't been able to see any evidence of that. So we're going to reintroduce it to get these days of respect on the school calendar. When you change the brain, you will change the behavior. We don't need it as a national holiday because St. Patrick's Day is not a national holiday, but it's on the school calendar, and it gets into the minds of our young people. And one of the other things we have to do is love our children into shape. If you whip them into shape, they'll get bent out of shape. If you love them into shape, they will stay in shape, and it's a mother's job to teach love, and that's one of the things we need to do. And thirdly, we just need to make our children know that they are special and they are loved, and that is why we are planning to have a Children of the Movement from 1954 to 2024, LTL Road Motorcade, you know, going down Emmett Till Road, and have all our children decorate the cars with their positive heroes and sheroes, especially the ones that schools have been closed in order to not only just shut down the ability to learn, but at the same time, they got rid of Black history, because the only heroes and sheroes memorials that we had for the most part were schools named after our heroes and sheroes. So when they closed the school, they closed the history, and now other histories are being put on those very buildings as we are being removed. And yes, it's time for the sons of former slaves and slave owners to sit at that table of brotherhood, because we are both being removed. And when I grew up in the Jim Crow genocide days, I didn't feel good about being frozen out of the human family because my skin color was black. Little white children don't feel good about being frozen out of the human family because their skin color is white, the color of snow. In case people say, well, white is not a color, we won't even have to go there. So this is what we have to do and fight for the America that our ancestors built. And at the end of the day, we are more American than anybody in America. We have the American name. We have the American custom. And everybody else that came over here, they are immigrants. They came over here, whether it was from Jamaica or Haiti or Poland or Ireland. They came to this country by choice, came from had a land and a language. America because English is our mother tongue language, and we need to be fighting to keep our mother tongue language and not have everything in all these other languages. Because to pass that test, you must read, write, and speak English.
Eve Angel, I want to ask you, I think one of the greatest challenges is to get our youth to listen to this truth. So much wisdom, so much knowledge and history is out there, but they have been conditioned in these modern times to only to receive a message in soundbite. Their attention span has been worn down. See, with the legalization of marijuana and all this other stuff, it's causing everybody's brain cells to be not working at its optimum. So would you suggest, or would it be something that could work where the things that you are expressing in terms of the 13th Amendment in sound bites, place it and use the mediums in which these young people are engaged in, i.e. TikTok and whatever, Twitters and all these other social media platforms, constantly putting out these messages and having them to reflect on this history, and then building a groundswell of young people wanting to learn more, wanting to join on and to see what they could do to affect the current history. What do you think about that?
I think that's right on target. You know, I had 18 two-year-olds in Hakeem and Safisha Madhubuti, the Institute of Positive Education, Betty Shabazz Charter School, et cetera. I had 18 two-year-olds, and when Harold Washington was running for mayor, I would sing them a little song, you know, Black Heroes, Yes, They Rose. They'll live again in us. Ain't no way, and I use the word ain't no way to keep the black ones down. And then I would show them photographs of black heroes, Harriet Tubman, black hero. And they knew all of these heroes and sheroes. And these two, when Harold Washington won the primary, because they looked upon him as a grandfather figure and they loved him dearly. When he won the primary, they came in. These were two-year-olds. And they had their blue buttons on and they were, we won, we won. And I said, okay. When they were 4 years old, we went down to Harold Washington and met with him on the fifth floor of City Hall. And we gave him 2,000 signatures asking him to proclaim April 4th as a day for victims of violence. And what was so interesting about it, I said, hey, you voted for him. Well, let's go down and see him. there we were in City Hall on the fifth floor. And these are little ones. They were, oh, my God. They were looking at the little preschoolers like they came from outer space or somewhere because no one had seen anything like it. And Harold Washington had them up in his arm. He had them sitting on his lap. And we had a wonderful time. But this is the way a youngster told me. I said, well, how do I reach you? He said, you have to make it about us. And see, when we do that L.T. Road, Children of the Movement, Motorcade, and the four little girls get put on a United States postage stamp, and Emmett Till and his mom get put on a United States postage stamp, and we begin to love our children into shape, they will get the message. And like you said, going on social media, talking about the L.T. Road, talking about the Children of the Movement, you know, and allowing them to write their little paragraphs or say their little sayings or asking them questions, allowing them to input. Because when Harold Washington died, I interviewed our three-year-olds because I knew how they felt about the mayor. And so I asked this little three-year-old, I said, well, how do you feel about what happened? She says, well, my grandma died. No, my grandma cried and I cried. And I said, well, why did you cry? And she said, because he was a good man and he read a lot of books. Out of the mouths of a three-year-old. So violence prevention begins in preschool, not in college.
I think what we're coming to a, I'm not going to say a conclusion because this conversation will be ongoing, but one of the points that Brother James drew from evangel is that it starts with the children and sort of educating them on our history. What is the 13th Amendment? And then what is the follow-up with the 14th Amendment? And what is June 13th? Because when I asked students in the middle school age, they really didn't know what Juneteenth is, and they're happy to have a day off. But I just want to make a point in sort of wrapping it up for today's conversation is that Pew Research Organization did a study in 1922, and the study was basically, just to encapsulate it real quick, it looked at how Black Americans view our position in America today. And out of the study, it came that Black adults were asked in the survey to assess the current nature of racism in the United States and whether structural or individual sources of this racism are a bigger problem for Black people. About half, 52% of Black adults say racism in our laws is a bigger problem than racism by individual people. While 4 in 10, 43% say acts of racism committed by individual people is the bigger problem. And as you were talking earlier in the conversation about legislature, and I think when we talk about voting rights and the act of voting, galvanizing the people, when you mentioned the high numbers that Barack Obama garnered from the Black community in his first and second term presidency, voting is definitely a very important part of our fabric and where we can go in this country, because even if you have pockets of community activism, it doesn't impact the whole. When the laws say if you jaywalk, you can get arrested, and all of the different loopholes that are allowing so many of our Black men and Black women to be incarcerated, and when they come out of this life of incarceration, then they have a whole nother double standard that they have to navigate through to become a viable citizen in the United States.
Absolutely, and it's institutionalized racism, but it's the racism taught. If it's unlawful to judge based on your race, creed, or color, then every time we say people of color, we're violating the law, because you are implying that there's somebody that's being frozen out of the human family, and that's okay. And it's not. So we have got to begin to challenge people. Say, we got all this uptick of racism because every time you open your mouth and say people of color, you are preaching racism and judging based on not the content of character, but the color of skin. And if we had a color, we would be with Black and Red, who they got Holocaust when their land was snatched. We got Holocaust when we were snatched from our homeland to work that stolen land. So we are twin victims of the American genocidal Holocaust. But laws like the John Lewis Voters Rights Advancement Act, it advances three groups of people, Latinos, Asians, and Native Americans, because the Democratic Congress said that they were the most voter-suppressed group, but you didn't see any of them out there marching. And when we're talking about people of color, no, we're talking about people of country. When they say Asia, they're talking about Japan, China, Korea, Vietnamese, in the country of India. When they say Latinos, they're talking about countries, Mexico, Puerto Rico, Spain, Cuba, these are countries. So why is it that they got mixed up with a racial group of people in the first place? How did that happen?
That's a very good question.
To be continued, huh?
I don't even want to open up that can right now because I know we're running out of time, but I want to sort of to bring it to a close with a quote by Martin Luther King, and he spoke about education because, as Brother James was saying, and you emphasized that point, it's very important, and this answers the question that we talked about in the beginning of this conversation. Why are we talking about the 13th Amendment today? What does it have to do with Black people's condition in America and its relationship to Juneteenth? And Martin Luther King said the function of education is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. And if we continue to do to have these kinds of conversations and opening up the mind, the perception of where we are today, just having the conversation is often the impetus of action. And before Brother James gives his closing thoughts and you, Eve Angel, give your closing thoughts, I want to invite you back to have a conversation on Emmett Till's birthday, which is July 25th. And I'd like to go a little deeper into that connection that you have with him in reference to the August 28th murder, the March on Washington, and even your birthday. So let's look at July 25th as another date that we can get together. Closing remarks, James?
Yes, I'd just like to say, Eve, thank you for coming on the Keys 107. We appreciate you. Your voice is much needed in our community. It must be amplified and shared all over America. And it would be wonderful to know that you have touched so many people who will stand up behind you and take your message to every nook and cranny of America, wherever black people are, and so that we can be educated and we can say like others, never again, never again, never again.
Powerful. Eve Angel?
Well, I just want to say for the honor as well to be here, but we have Humanitarian Day, January 15th, wearing the color twice, usually affirming the principles of human individual rights. And our theme is 1954 to 2024. It's 70 years answering the doubt. Jim Crow genocide survivors demand reparations to overcome heart, mind, and subjugated race.
And I would like to emphasize what Brother James said. It's just been an honor in our conversations leading up to this day of talking to each other about December 18th. It's just been such an honor, and you have opened my mind up. I didn't know what Chicago was doing and what you have initiated. And in being in New York, we don't often get the kind of news. So this is why these kinds of conversations are important to open up in our airways. On behalf of the Keys 107 Network, Eve Angel, you have a place here anytime you want to come back.
Wow, you are. I'm shouting, and I haven't gone to church. I visit on Sundays, but I worship on Saturdays. And I am just, my spirit is just so happy, and I'm just so thrilled that you all just see the value in loving our children into shape.
Oh, absolutely. And we'd like to thank Anthony King for making this connection possible, because he was very persistent and he said, you have to speak to Eve Angel, but as he calls you, Mama D. And I just keep 107 in the right way. So thank you again, and I look forward to speaking to you on July 25th.
Thank you again. Take care.